Right. Welcome to the talk on OCFS2. This, unfortunately, isn't actually my talk. No, really, it isn't. It's Mark's. It's not mine at all. So how many of you are actually interested in the full internal workings of OCFS2? Hands up. You just want to hate me, don't you? Right. Okay. So much for that. I was going to ad-lib a lot of this. Okay. OCFS2 is Oracle's clustered file system. This is the second incarnation of it. We've already had OCFS version 1 out there, which... Yeah.
Hello? Ah, much better. Okay, OCFS2, this is the second incarnation of Oracle's clustered file system. How many of you are actually using OCFS? Okay, just a small handful of you. How many are actually interested in using OCFS? Ah, okay, that's more promising. Okay, OCFS was originally designed to handle Oracle's rack system. That's the real-time application cluster stuff. We got an awful lot of inquiries from some of our larger customers, Amazon and the like, running around asking, could we make it a wee bit more useful and general purpose? Because OCFS2 was really designed around large data files. OCFS was. OCFS2 is designed around being a more general purpose file system. That means that you should be able to treat it, for all intents and purposes, exactly like an ext3 system, symbolic links and all that kind of fun stuff. In terms of performance, OCFS, it's very close to ext3 speeds. It's not quite as fast. But for general purpose use, it's okay. You won't be able to actually use it as a root file system, not just yet. There's a few bits and tweaks have to go in just yet. Oh, you've tried and failed. No? Well, even with the device files? Well, I'm surprised. Mark must have changed something. Okay. 1 second. Oh, yeah, so he did. Okay, let's see. OCFS2, the nice thing about it is it's not NFS. NFS allows you to share one file system between many nodes using the network itself. So your file system will sit on one node and everything else has to drag all the files back across the network. And there's a performance hit, obviously, in doing that. OCFS, on the other hand, allows you to have a standalone storage device, be it iSCSI or a FireWire disk, God help you. And that will allow you to have all nodes actively access the same data at the same time. Well, obviously with little locks and whatever. God, that sucks. Never works. Let's see. Yes. As I said, this is not my talk. What on earth is he talking about here? Okay. Local alloc. Local allocation allows us to, on a single node, to increase the performance by making sure that... hold on, I actually have the notes for that. I apologize for this. Yeah. Very early on in the design of the OCFS2, it was determined that a large amount of performance could be gained by reducing the contention on the cluster allocator. Essentially, the local alloc is a node local system file with an in inode bitmap which caches clusters. You can tell I'm reading this. The lookalike file is never locked within the cluster. Access is exclusive to the mounted node. This allows the block to remain valid in memory for the entire lifetime of mount. As the lookalike bitmap is exhausted of free space, an operation called the window slide is done. First, any unallocated bits left in the lookalike are freed back to the cluster alloc sector. I have no idea what he's going on about. This is not good. Okay, I can at least talk about this. There are multiple threads which run inside the cluster stack. There's the netreceive thread, which communicates between all the various nodes. In OCFS 2, you can have up to 254 nodes talking to each other that can share the same file system. The only caveat with that, of course, is they're all heart beating between each other and you start to get an awful lot of traffic, so performance can degrade once you go beyond about 70 plus nodes. Most people won't go that far. Unfortunately, we've got some customers that do. The heart beating thread, on the other hand, it sits there and it simply pings each of the particular nodes to see if they're actually still active in the cluster. Inside the file structure of OCFS2, there are slots. OCFS2 will heartbeat across both the network and it will also heartbeat to the disk itself, so that if you have a network split, it can still see if the node is active by looking at the disk. In the event that it can't see a heartbeat on the disk, then it just simply assumes that the node is dead and just removes it from the voting cluster. DLM thread, the distributed lock manager. One of the real problems with Linux over the past while has been that there's been no lock manager. Not even the NFSD lock manager works properly. The distributed lock manager that we've got in OCFS2 is actually fairly simple. It's not complex in any major way. Consequently, it does have some limitations, but we're more interested in just getting the thing to work. So the cluster stack, its main purpose is just really to make sure that the nodes inside OCFS2 are actually still there and are still representing what's going on on the disk. Let's see. As we see here, we also have OCFS2 voting threads, and there's one per mount which handles the file system messaging with the DLM. It's all just an up and down stack of passing messages between each thread. Hello, I happen to do mounting. That's very nice. I happen to want a lock. Okay, ask the other thread. Thread that handles lock then says, I happen to hold locks on groups. It doesn't actually know what on earth the mount point is. It just simply knows that it's a lock of some description. It's some little bit of metadata. Kernel D, again, one per mount. It's just the kernel journaling thread. It joins into the JBD thread that currently exists within Linux. We use the JBD because, one, it's been there for a long time. Two, there's no point in us writing a completely new journal back end because, well, it would take time to settle down and be more stable. We might as well use something that's there, so we just use that. There's also recovery threads. Now, recovery threads are interesting because their whole action is to run through the journal log and work out which bits of the transaction are current and which aren't. And it's when you have a node that goes down, comes back up again, then you have to look at the transaction logs to work out, has any of the transactions that have not been seen before, have they been overwritten by the newer requests put in on the other nodes? So it gets all very iffy. when you sit and try and do it with paper. Thank God computers can do it for us. Okay, volume layout. Okay, there's a super block, and inside that super block, it will provide you with information about where the root directory sits in terms of the relative block. The absolute block length into the disk. It also holds a slot map. The slot map is generated when you first create the OCFS file system. Inside that file system, when you first create it, the default is for 4 nodes. So if you want to increase that, you have to use tune OCFS 2 for to generate the other slots inside the volume layout. There's also a section for the heartbeat, and that's per slot. So for each particular node, there will be a slot where it will write into the superblock saying, I'm still here, I'm still alive, and I'm still doing work. There's the obvious global bitmap that works out which parts of the disk are actually still active or being accessed, orphan directories, and all the other fun stuff. Okay. Space management. One second while I refer to notes. Good idea. Okay, the space management. It just doesn't work. One of the things about file system is that it self-optimizes as you write files to it. Where it works out that there are files which expand multiple I blocks are all grouped together as a cluster, and those clusters are then written out as a continuous block. They're added to the end of the chain, such that when you go to look at the file system again and say, I need 3 blocks, they're just there at the very start of the chain. This increases the performance a wee bit. I think we worked it out at about 5-7%. Okay. The local alloc, again, this is the allocation on the node. Rather than tell every node in the cluster that you have space allocated for a particular file, the one node that's doing the operation does the allocation itself. Because it's writing to the disk file, all it simply has to do is simply block out in the bitmap, these blocks are being used, and I'm going to do something about it. This cuts down on the network traffic required for OCFS2 to update the other nodes as to what's going on. Nothing really much there that you'd really want to know, to be honest. Okay, the distributed lock manager. It's asynchronous locking model. It uses the VMS model, but it's a cut-down version, so none of the more fancy bits added to it. It only has 3 locking levels. NL, PR, EX, which is not locked, private, and exclusive. There's deadlock detection, and there's an automatic lock migration for when a node goes down, move the lock over to the other nodes. Thank you very much. Otherwise, you'll just be sitting there spinning going, why is my cluster doing nothing? Unfortunately, this is not actually all the slides, but since we're buggered, unfortunately. Which one is it? Wrong one. Okay. Disk inodes in OCFS2. Inodes in OCFS2 follow more or less the same pattern as EXT3. The reason is that we just blatantly copied EXT3's ideas. There's no point in trying to reinvent the wheel. OCFS2 allows us to access up to, I think it's 16 terabytes of data space on one volume. And believe me, we do have people who sit there and say, is that all? Now, those inodes are actually based on a B-plus tree. The B-plus tree is just where you have all the data is held in the inodes. In the leaves at the very bottom of the tree, and all of the metadata is held in the interlinking nodes in between. The reason for doing that is that you get a speed increase when you're reading at the very bottom of the leaf tree. Nothing really here that you want. Okay. Is there anything that you'd want to know about OCFS? I'd be more easy to talk to you if you just ask the questions rather than me trying to tell you what it is. So, yeah. Okay, that's fair enough. OCFS2, it's, as I said, originally it was based around trying to build for Oracle Rack applications. But OCFS2 is the later incarnation of OCFS, which is to try and make it into a more general purpose file system. The interesting thing about OCFS2 is that it's a lot simpler to configure and set up than GFS. Now, GFS, of course, is maintaining and both projects both develop and become better as we go along. But at the moment, you would actually have one configuration file for OCFS2, which does not change between any of the nodes. So you just have to maintain one file and just copy it to all the nodes that you're interested in. Most of the POSIX semantics are also there in the OCFS2 file system. You also have, and I'm not sure. Sorry? yes, okay. There's a few bits and pieces. Well, I think they do work now, but I remember that they didn't. For example, some of the locking systems didn't work for removing tiered directories. That, I think, has been fixed since. Yeah, you've got the access control list stuff. Yes. Yeah. You also have another thing, which is the CDSL, which is experimental, which allows you on a per node basis to set up a file that the node will see as being local to itself, although it's a shared file across all the nodes. I'll give you an example. /etc hostname. Hostname is unique to each individual host, but it's part of the slash file system. An OCFS2 file system, theoretically, and this man says he managed to do it, it allows you to have the same file system mounted across all the nodes, but then you could have individual files set up such that they are seen as individual to the nodes themselves. So while each node would see /etc hostname, it would look unique to it. Say that again.
Did you say that we need to have
Yes, you would. The reason being is that a lot of applications have their own configuration files, which are unique. Yes. Well, no. It's in the file system itself. It's actually in OCFS2. It doesn't point to a different file system. It's inside the OCFS2 file system itself. So you don't have to sort of like say slash sector file name points to slash var slash local stuff.
So you outlined the general purpose of the OCFS2. So I'm interested in why there is no quota support and why is it not even planned?
Well, no quota support, etc. It's not so much that it's not in plan. It's just that we haven't got the sublayers written yet, the abstractions. We will eventually get around to it. But at the moment, we're not seeing anybody screaming, for God's sakes, give us quota support. Are you Amazon? you got to remember, OCFS2, yes, it's an open source project that's being done by Oracle. But Oracle, at core, is a business. And it will always follow a business drive and a business need. Yes, we take on stuff like, hey, it would be really cool to have, quota support. And we'll say, well, yes, it would. And we'll see about trying to add that in. Sorry, there was another... Yourself? Yes. Yes, that's done by the really secret directory that you don't see. If you use the debugfs.ocfs, it's a tool for it to debug the file system, and you say ls//, you will suddenly see that there's a whole new file structure in there that you've never seen before. And there you'll see all these lovely little extra files which describe what I'm going on about. It's all hidden, you know, it's all smoke and mirrors. Yes. You can just use it directly on a single node. You can. Well, you. Oh no! OCFS2 just simply says, "Where's the block device?" So, you can either use network block device, you can use iSCSI, you can use shared firewire disk. No. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah. But that's over a network. I mean, you can use iSCSI, you can use Fibre Channel, you can use... I've used it with FireWire. It's very slow with FireWire, but it works. It's very cheap. Mm. Yeah. Okay. Told you, the world is driven by business. Sorry, yourself at the back. You've been waiting a while.
What is your particular performance thing you optimize for? Is it the large file case? Is it whatever small files? I mean,
it's actually more aligned for large files. Well, it's more aligned towards large file support, obviously, because Oracle, large databases, thank you very much, large data file, run through that. But the way that the allocation and storage of the files is done, it's self-optimizing, so there's really no significant difference between small files and large file access and read and write. So it's roughly the same apart from the actual physical time of moving a disk head.
Yeah, maybe the question is more like what is the maximum latency?
That's my next question. Yeah. I mean, number worst case for file open, how many round trips do you in the worst case need?
Well, you see, when the file system is originally mounted, we've borrowed a little trick from from EXT3, which is we read the top level directory and we cache that locally. Yeah. So that's always in memory up until such point that it gets its lifetime object expires and it's just kicked out of the cache. But realistically, we've run tests with EXT3 and OCFS2 side by side, and you're only seeing.
That's the case where two nodes are contending for a single file.
Mm-hmm. You will get locking. You know, one node will just simply say, "For God's sakes, will you hurry up and let me out the file?"
Right.
But you know, that's just part of clustering. You just have to wait. Sometimes there's an exclusive lock. Sometimes it's like, you know, I want to append to this. You can, you know, read from it at the same time if you like. It's when you're writing stuff. If you've got two nodes trying to write to the same file at the same time, then you've got all the contention and locks and who's got the voting right, etc.
I mean, you see my T-shirt here in Samba. Windows applications tend to do exactly that. Mm. So if you really run that on a cluster file system, you'll get to see interesting performance problems, for sure.
Yeah. But then again, most data warehouse stores aren't really writing that much beyond, you know, how much they've actually cached up at the tills. Most of them are just sort of like reading out from the data files, like, how much is this? It's mostly read access that comes from the data store. I know that's not really the answer that you want, but it's the best that I've got for you. Next. Yes, yourself.
Would you say something about OCFS2 versus ASM?
ASM. Oh, yes.
Why would I use?
Flexibility. It really depends on the application, what you're wanting to use it for. To be honest, OCFS2 will eventually replace ASM. ASM's nice from the point of view of it's just a raw disk, go play with it, thank you very much. But OCFS2, it's Linux only. That's the only little caveat about it. You know, we don't have a SunOS version of it. We don't have a Windows, well, we do have a Windows version, but that's OCFS, not OCFS2. It's very confusing. Yeah, that's it. Go on, just keep throwing them out. It's the best I can do for you. Yes? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see. The clustering file system, as it's running, it normally pulls data blocks in at about, I think the default is 8K. No, sorry, 4K. 4K is the inode size, and the cluster size is 4 meg, I think, is the default. Yes. Oh, yeah, yeah. There's no point in sort of like saying, oh, look, here is a 1 terabyte file. I am Mr. Node, and I want to write like 4 bytes at the end, so I'm going to lock the whole damn thing and stop everybody from looking at it. No, you can lock off just the small, there's a bitmap, and you just lock off, you know, that belongs to Node, whoever. So, you get around that. The other problem that you get, of course, is where you have multiple nodes and you get a network split. So let's say you have, 6 nodes. 6 nodes and something catastrophic happens and half the network falls apart. So half the nodes vanish. So you're now in the domain of split brain, which is 50-50. What happens then is that each individual node, remember I was going on about slot numbers? Each one of them has a slot number. So what happens is that they know from their configuration files what nodes should be there. They, from that, can extrapolate what slot numbers they should be in. And they just go, right, who has the lowest slot numbers? And in that 50-50 situation, it just simply defaults to, we're 4, 5, 6, we're not part of 1, 2, 3, therefore we'll just fall over to 1, 2, 3 as being the de facto go-ahead part of the cluster. So that should 4, 5, and 6 come back in a later state, they will just go, right, we'll just roll forward the transactions. Oh yeah, we do that. Yes. No, because you have to have it'll write to the file, but the write to the file isn't complete until the transaction is written into the journal log. So until the journal log is actually told this write has been completed, that write has not actually happened. So yes, you can be in the middle of writing something and it just goes, yeah. But without the transaction log having said, yep, I've signed off that has been written, then it's not written and something else in the cluster will take over and go, yep, I'll write there. Well, you can, the transaction logs are actually kept on the current OCFS file system that you're using, but it is possible to actually set up a different OCFS2 file system to hold all the journal logs on. To be honest, I can't think of a reason to do that, because then you've got another point of failure. Okay, next. Yourself again? Well, that's us playing, actually. I suspect that's Mark playing with some of the new semantics. I mean, as I say, OCFS2, it's an ongoing project. Now, I think Mark is actually in the middle of playing with the heartbeat code at the moment, and he more than likely has put in timing problems there. I know that we did have problems with some of the larger nodes that, if we had too many mounts and unmounts going on simultaneously, that we'd lose heartbeats, and suddenly the OCFS would think, oh, heck, this node has gone offline, when it hadn't. simply because it hadn't seen any activity from the node because it was busy writing to the files or trying to get an access log to the file. The performance issues are being addressed. It's one of our primary concerns. More importantly, Amazon keeps saying, why is it slow? Well, yes. But we are addressing it. We're getting there. We're only, what, two? Well, we used to be 2% behind AXT3. So we're trying. We'll get there eventually. Yes. I said before, it works out by slot number. It simply says, oh my god, it's a 50-50 split brain. Who has the lowest slot number? Oh, it was you. And it just simply goes with that. Well, the node itself tries to detect whether or not it itself is in a bad state. And in deference to other HA stuff like Stoneth, we have Smith, which is shoot myself in the head. So the node will actually kill itself rather than... The point is to get to a node that will sort of like take over and say, yeah, okay, I know what the heck I'm doing. Yep, sorry, yourself.
How is it all does OCFS integrate with cluster managers? I mean, if I have a cluster of a couple of nodes, I have OCFS deployed here, and I probably have some sort of cluster manager which decides which service to run on which node. So is there anything...
Oh, do you mean is there an API that you can query to sort of say, have I been disconnected from the cluster? Yes. Right.
And they do not necessarily agree. So is there any...
Yeah, there is actually a userland API for to talk to CFS2's DLM. I personally haven't used it. You'll have to ask Mark about it. But you can actually query OCFS2 and simply say, hello, I think something bad has happened. Can you tell me what you think has happened? You know, and it'll sort of like say, well, I think I've been disconnected, or it'll just simply say, yeah, things are okay. So there is a small, it's not a terribly detailed API, but you would be able to interrogate the OCFS2 file system and say, what's going on? Is that enough for you, or would you like to have another...
integrating OCFS with cluster managers, so yeah, it has to be done.
Okay. Well, yeah, I mean, like, it's just a case of getting onto the mail lists and just sort of like screaming, yes, we would like, you know, some sort of API that we can query or something that we can talk to. There is a minimal API there. Next, anyone? Or are we out of time? Nope, still got time. Okay. I should apologize. I should point out that I was actually told about 3 days before coming here, you're giving a talk. By the way, here's the slides. By the way, here's Mark's speech. Go make it happen.
Yeah. It was actually a little more complicated than that. Originally, the talk was submitted by some marketing people on behalf of someone who works for Oracle, and we accepted it without understanding that the person the marketing people had put forward wasn't actually able to come, because marketing hadn't checked with him. And so Phil has very kindly stood in for him, because it was already on the program by that time.